Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of July, Anno Domini 2012, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
You looked a little confused.
I'm just, it's been one of those weeks.
Just not fully focused yet.
I'm not fully focused, not even half focused. Or some other F word. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. We're doing this. It's the dues. You'll notice that Steve Ray is still not with us.
He's off in Toronto somewhere.
I thought he was taking the Great Circle route to stay one step ahead of the police in the Great Northwest, the Canadian Mounties. But Rick has graciously consented to join us, and he will be able and willing to answer all of your Macintosh questions and pretty much everything else that anyone could ask. But let's start with, and you, of course, can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. As many as 64,000 Americans' computers may still be infected by malware that will cause them to lose internet service Monday. So make sure you aren't among those infected if you haven't already checked. The problem is a result of a large online advertising scam that took over more than 4 million computers around the world. When the FBI went to shut down the scheme, the agency realized that turning off the malicious servers would cause infected computers to lose access to the internet entirely. So the FBI set up two other servers which have been connecting infected users to the internet, but they will be shut down at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time Monday. There are various ways to test your computer for the so-called DNS changer malware, but remember, this actually applies only to Windows users, so if you have a Linux or an Apple computer or an iOS device or an Android device, you're fine. If you want something simple, really just go check your computer at www.dns-ok.us. That's D for domain name server-ok.
Yep.
.us. The FBI links to this site, so you know it's pretty trustworthy. If your computer is clean, you get a big green image. If not, you get a red image. The only issue with that site is that sometimes it doesn't work. I've tried it 3 times on 2 computers, but it worked only once. Google and Facebook have also been notifying users if their computers are infected. So if you haven't surfed over to either site in a while, it may be that that's a quick and simple and certain way of checking for the malware. Just go to Google, go to Facebook. If you get this big screen that says you're infected, you're infected. If you are infected, fixing the issue could take a little bit of time.
Well, this is Channel 8 came over to our shop and interviewed us. You know, it's one of these things. This is not brand new. This has been out for over a year. And it's just the folks that, you know, if they've got, especially like one of my friends, she's running Norton Security Suite. And you know, I mean, if you're running something that checks besides viruses, because everybody thinks it's just a virus. No, this is malware, and it's totally separate. Viruses used to like to just, oh, get on your machine and erase files or just do stupid stuff. The malware and spyware get in there, and they're malicious. They want to steal information. They want to corrupt files and steal, like, your email address books or your personal information.
Right. And that's what this one did, but it doesn't anymore because the government stopped that, but you're still infected.
Right.
The big thing now is what they did was they changed the look, when you get on the internet and you type in, for example, soundbites.org, the internet doesn't understand soundbites.org. What it understands is a number, 70.129.230.6.
It's like a telephone number.
Yep. So what happens is your computer says, I have no idea what soundbites.org is, and it goes out to a DNS server, domain name services, which translates the name into the correct IP address. So what this, so you can go there. Well, what this malware does is it sends you to a different server. So most of the time, it actually just sends you through with no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if, for example, you were to go to a specific bank, it would actually send you to the bad guy's banking site instead,
exactly.
Which looks exactly like the real one, has the right address. You don't know you've been trapped. Well, it's a man-in-the-middle attack.
And the thing of it is, though, is and a lot of folks don't pay attention to the...
But it wouldn't have changed in this case. It would still be, say, Chase.com.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is instead of them typing it physically in...
Right.
You know, if they're clicking on a link or something else...
In this case, it would not have mattered. Because when you went to Chase.com, mm-hmm. the bad server said, oh, Chase.com is over here.
It's being redirected.
In this case,
right.
there's no way you would even know it
right.
happened.
Right.
So in this case, it's a slightly different thing. So
and they look as exactly like the original
bank. Right. That's exactly
I mean, they're doing fantastic jobs of cloning themselves of watermarks and everything else.
So if your computer is affected, make sure to call your internet provider or a reputable dealer and get help getting your DNS changed back to what it should be. And if your computer has been infected, the smartest thing to do is change all the passwords on all your websites and applications because they may have them. Look, that could take you an hour or two, but changing your passwords from time to time is something you should be doing anyway. So,
and do it after you've been fixed.
Right, yeah. right. After you've been fixed, and even before you change your password, you might want to dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com to make sure you don't have anything else on your machine. And remember, if you don't check your computer and you can't get on Facebook on Monday... Don't call us.
Well, they can call me.
Or, of course, you. Well, they certainly didn't call you. But, you know, don't tell us, well, we didn't warn you.
Yeah.
So, the question of the week, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Are you free of DNS changer? And the choices are absolutely, I know I'm clean. And definitely, probably, I think. And living on the edge, baby. So far. So far, we've got 34 votes, and 53% of you absolutely know you're clean, probably because you're not actually running Windows. But I know you'll have more to say about that. So when you're done with your voting, you can check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can answer the question, how did you decide you were free of DNS changer? And, of course, that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like James did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Oh, actually, I have a question about email. But on that DNS, I went on that FBI website, green or red. I took the thing, and mine came up clean. So does that mean I'm okay?
You're okay.
Yep.
You're fine.
Okay.
For that
My
virus.
My question is, all of a sudden yesterday, I have Windows Live Mail.
Yeah.
I got about 100 of these mail delivery system, mail delivery failures on the email.
Yep.
Coming from
other people that you know?
No, nobody I know. The message was created automatically by the mail system eCentury.
Yeah. Okay.
What is that?
Again,
I got like 100 of those, and then fortunately today I don't have any. I got batches of them at a time. Mail delivery failures.
Yeah. Dance the tango.
Well, it may not be you.
Right.
Windows, it may not be you, but you should dance the tango anyway.
Does the tango do the email?
It'll clean the viruses off your system, and if those viruses are attacking your email, then it'll fix that. But
today I don't have any. Yesterday I got about 150 of these, batches of 20, 30.
Yeah, they'll get it. The reason I say dance the tango is only because if one of them has the virus or the malware in it, that you might have clicked on.
I deleted all of them.
All right. But the thing that is then fine. Yeah, one of your friends or associates is probably infected, and they got your name. So then what happens is, and this is part of the malware, spyware thing. They script kiddies create these programs, and all they do is go out there and grab email addresses, and they suck them back in. Now what this script kiddie does is they compile, say, list of over, say, 500,000 email address. And they'll offer them to these other spoofers, say, for $25. So they wrote a program that just sits back and gathers all these emails on your machine, sucks it all in, and they make a profit in selling your email address.
Oh, wow. And then you get the bottom of them is something about a money-making scheme.
That's the one.
Yep.
Yep.
There you go.
It's basically just like the kind of spam you used to get in your mailbox, only now it's coming through email. And so it's unlikely that it's you. One thing that I've known, I've several people just kept getting them day after day after day, and they moved off of Windows Live Mail to something else, Google or you know,
Thunderbird.
Whatever.
Right. But Thunderbird has a good junk control.
Yeah, can I use the same email address over there?
Yeah. Well, yeah. In fact, you can. You're just not looking at it through... You might not want to go with Thunderbird. You might want to pick something else. We've got a story about Thunderbird later.
What do you recommend?
Up until last night, I would have recommended Thunderbird.
Yeah, but
so
that
I'm still
it's
looking.
Be patched.
I'm still no. It's they're stopping.
They're not going to support it.
They're stopping support for Thunderbird.
Yeah, I have Capri.
Really?
Should I still run the Tango?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, I'll run that and see how it goes. I got a ton of them yesterday, zero today, and I'll take all your advice and follow through on everything.
Excellent. Thanks.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'll actually read that one after the next break.
Okay.
That'll be our next thing. It's going to be an interesting.
I got to share something with you.
Here we go.
Friend Bill Clancy sent this on, and you know we're talking about how things have changed so much, and it's a great thing of like 2 cent stamps. You don't see those anymore.
No, you don't.
Home phone book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Here's something that's disappearing. The glove box roadmap.
That's right.
Other things. Answer machine. A TV tube television. I can remember as a kid going down to the Key drugstore sometimes because the tube would break out, you know, breaking the machine. You had to take it down there, put it in the tube tester.
You had to take three or four of them, don't you know which one broke?
Well, usually
if
they didn't glow.
Well, but still, you take a couple down and... test them in the tube tester. Absolutely.
Yeah. Another thing, the phone books.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody now can sit there on their phones, smartphones, and do it. Now, this is one I disagree with. It's bank deposit slips. I guess for most folks, because they do direct
businesses
deposit.
Businesses are a different story, but for the individual.
Well, even, you know, occasional checks, but a lot of that stuff. Now, this is one that I still have, and that's this case, they say a Subway token. I still have an RTS bus token.
Oh, sure.
Back in the day when they still used tokens.
Yeah.
And kept one of those.
I'll tell you what, I made a bucket load of cash. I was living in New York City, and they changed the token. They raised the price from 25 to 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were the days. And we pooled our money together and bought about $300 worth of tokens because we had heard they weren't changing. Friend of ours worked for them, said they weren't changing the token itself. They weren't changing the token, just the price.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought them all at a quarter and sold a bunch at 50 cents.
Mm.
Doubled our money.
Uh-huh.
I still had enough tokens left over that I didn't pay for another bus ride or train ride the entire time I was in New York.
Yeah. Well, some of the other things is a Rolodex. Printed encyclopedia.
Yeah. Britannica just went out of business, right?
Yeah. It's all Google.
I had an Encyclopedia Britannica as a kid, read it cover to cover.
Now, here's something.
I have an OED, an Oxford English Dictionary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In actual hardcover.
Remember, there used to be a big fight, the green or the yellow box?
No.
Film.
Yeah.
Oh, film, sure.
Kodak or Fuji.
Yeah, Kodak or Fuji. They're saying that's gone. The incandescent light bulb.
Oh, you can still get them. You just get them from overseas now. There's people at the market who sell them every week.
Yeah, there. One thing that I'm sad to see is cursive writing.
Yeah.
They're saying Hawaii, Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio have officially dropped handwriting as an educational requirement, with many states currently considering doing the same. One day, extra instructions may be required for students who wish to read historical documents in the original draft. Now, is that a sad state to say?
You've got to be kidding.
No. It's the dumbing down of America. God forbid we actually teach our children.
Yeah.
We don't do that
anymore.
That is
the most depressing one on all of this. I mean, other stuff, I can sit there and relate to, you know, business cards or physical media. Now with the cloud, you know, they're saying like DVDs and Blu-rays and all the thumb drives.
Yep.
They're all going by the wayside because you can do everything up on the cloud.
Well, yes and no. For example, I have a Galaxy Nexus phone. because I got it before, you know, it's contraband now. but it has near-field communication and an NFC chip in it, right? Mm-hmm. So if you had one, I could bump phones with you and exchange credit cards.
Oh, yeah.
Not credit cards.
Information.
I could, but I don't want to do that.
Or appointments.
Business cards.
Yep. Uh-huh.
The problem is you have to have something with near-field communications, too. Now, they're starting to come out. The theory is Apple will have that shortly. I don't know. But the point is, right now I can't. Right now it's semi-useless, so I still have to carry business cards with me.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. You know, it'll be new and different in the future, but...
Again, Bill Clancy, thank you very much for passing this on. I found this very enlightening.
Yeah, I see those often on the web. My favorite one is only people of a certain age will understand the relationship between these two items, and it's a cassette and a pencil.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, I saw somebody up at the Jazz Fest. They were coming around, husband and wife team, both had them. They were a tattoo on their arm. She got it first, and then he had to get it. You know those on 45s, you used to put those yellow disc
Absolutely.
Things in to go on the spindle? They had that tattooed
nice.
On their arm. A lot of they said kids were coming up to him. What is that, a new tribal symbol?
Yeah, right.
And they the two
is that a video game I don't know about?
And they're you know they're about my age and they're both sitting there saying and they just smile because they're yellow.
Yes, it is a tribal symbol you don't know about. That is exactly what it is.
I thought that was so
and
cool.
You're not in the tribe, you little.
And both of them had these yellow discs on their shoulder, and everybody thought it was some cool younger kids tribal symbol.
Yep. Yep, yep. Actually, I need a T-shirt with that on it. That's what I need.
Did you see where the Furbies are going to be coming back?
No! How very exciting is that?
Well, it's kind of scary. It's not going to have an off switch as per usual. So that'll drive all the parents nuts, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, we have to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Rick Harris, and me, Nick Francesco. And you actually breathe at some point in this. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites right here. On member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. That was my buddy Amanda.
Oh, was it?
We used to work together at our news, and then she left town, and now she's back, and she works for Channel 10.
Boy, they had to do that one over the phone, and it just about blew my eardrums out.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. She's a sweetie. I like her. I saw her the other night. I was at, you did Channel whatever.
Yeah, Channel 8.
Channel 8. I did Channel 10 for Rock City Tonight, talking about the same thing, same deal. All right, listen, before we get back to the phones, I teased this in the last segment, and I guess I ought to read the news item now. Mozilla is not actually stopping Thunderbird development. It's just decided that, and I quote, continued innovation on Thunderbird is not the best use of our resources given our ambitious organizational goals, end quote. And it's pulling people off the project. But that's not stopping, right? This, according to a letter shared with Mozillians ahead of the official announcement, to be revealed this coming Monday. Recipients were asked not to share the letter, blog, or tweet about the news until then, but obviously someone out there didn't agree with that plan. While it sure to upset some diehards, it's a move that makes sense, given that Thunderbird, an open-source Outlook competitor, is desktop software in a world that's been rapidly moving to mobile and web. Mozilla itself has been ramping up efforts in these areas as of late with the recent introductions of its Boot to Gecko OS, now called Firefox OS. For example, as well as and that's essentially a competitor to the Google OS, as well as a new web-based code editor called Fimble and Junior, which is a WebKit-based browser for the iPad, and, of course, the Firefox mobile web browser and a whole lot more stuff, too. The timing of the Thunderbird announcement is kind of funny, though, since it was barely a month ago that Mozilla was touting the release of a new version of Thunderbird. Which introduced options for large file sharing and the ability to create personalized email addresses. Now it seems that the company's focus will be mainly on security and stability, not new features. On Monday, the company will post details of Thunderbird's proposed governance model to complement the forthcoming blog post from Mozilla Foundation Chair Mitchell Baker. Although the letter makes it sound like the reassignments from Thunderbird to other projects would be new changes, people actually started moving off of Thunderbird back in January. And as for any hope to the community of Thunderbird contributors, will rise up to fill the gaps once those folks are gone, well, don't hold your breath on that one. Do you use Thunderbird? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like our friend Linda did from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda, what's up?
Hi. Okay, I got a question for you. I don't use my computer, as you know. Last week, I printed some cards for birthdays, and I haven't used it since.
Right.
I've got AVG Internet Security. Now my question is, am I infected since I don't use it except to go into my music or print cards? How, you know, because I haven't turned it on in a week.
Well, this has been going on for most of a year. So here's what you do.
Uh-huh.
You turn on your machine, open up your web browser, and go to Google.
Uh-huh.
If it comes up and tells you you're infected, you're infected. If it doesn't, you're not. So if you just see the normal Google screen, you're clean.
Oh, I see. So in other words, if I go into normal Google screen to search for something,
right,
and if it comes up with nothing on it, I'm okay.
Just to open up your machine and go to Google.com.
Uh-huh.
And if you see the normal Google screen, you're good.
Oh, okay. Because I'm thinking to myself, I don't use it that often.
Right.
Now, this doesn't have anything to do with iPad or anything like that, does it?
No.
Okay. Okay. I wasn't sure because I thought to myself, I know I called the last week, but I think I better call and find out what's going on.
Right.
Okay.
But that's
Thank
it. You're
very
good.
Much, gentlemen.
You're good, Linda. Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, that's the easiest way for people to tell. Just go to Google. Google is checking machines to see whether or not they're infected, just like the FBI is doing. And if you are infected, you get a big screen that says you're infected. Fix it. And I believe it offers some links to help you with that. But other than that, no. This has been going on for a year. We reported this back in November, I think, December. And again in like February, but people, you know, we're down to the wire now that they're going to absolutely shut it down come Monday. Our next caller is Chris, who's, in the car.
On our way, yes. In Pennsylvania, on our way to Virginia.
Actually, the other way. I started in Charlotte this morning and I thought, Nick, I just listened in the podcast last week. You did a great job on your own.
Thank you so much.
It's the Nick and Linda show.
I did the security tangle a couple of weeks ago or so on my laptop, and I noticed as I went into safe mode, I have Windows 64-bit. It came up 62-bit, though, as I went into it, and it kind of caught me off guard. I'm wondering why that is, if I have 64-bit.
Well, it couldn't have said 62-bit. No. It might have said 62 gigs?
No, it said 32-bit as I went into...
Oh, safe mode is,
but
yes.
I have 64.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Safe mode is 32-bit.
See, here's the thing with safe mode. Safe mode takes your computer down to the bare essence. In other words, it doesn't load a lot of the high-end graphics, so you don't see, you know, usually your icons and everything else are on the screen are a lot bigger because it's not putting in the high-end graphics card. And a lot of other TSRs don't get loaded. It's just the bare minimum to load Windows. And in that doing that, it also reverts back down to 32-bit versus 64.
Okay, I just thought maybe there was something wrong because I knew I had 64, and it's like, whoa, something's not right here.
No, that's normal for 30 when you go into safe mode anytime.
Okay.
Yep.
And then another question. I have an iPad, the original one, and I'm going to be going out west here for about 3 weeks. I've got a couple of DS cards that I'll download to my iPad. I don't really want to take my laptop with me. Somebody suggested a wireless external drive, but I can't reverse that. I know I can go from the computer to the iPad, but I can't go from iPad to a wireless external, can I?
They do make them. Mm-hmm. So you could buy one of those units.
What would I be looking for?
I would go out to Google and do the search that you were talking about.
And okay.
You should come across it.
Okay, so I don't have to hook it up to my laptop at all. I can just say I have an iPad and I want to wirelessly connect to an external drive.
Yes, it's a wireless external drive. I believe Kensington makes one.
Okay. All right, thanks. I didn't think it was possible, but I know there's the iCloud and some other things, but I just don't want to go that route right now.
Sure, that's understandable. Mm-hmm. The reality is that while the iPad is a terrific device, if you're going to carry everything in it, you better have an awfully big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 64 mm-hmm. gig machine or an external drive
yeah.
that will hold all the other stuff you're hoping to have.
Well, I'm just wanting to get the pictures off. You know, I'll have it on my SD card. I'll have it on the iPad. Usually I put it on the laptop, but I don't want to carry that. So I thought if I just had an external drive, I could also put it over there.
Right, right. So you're going to take the pictures and you'll be able to move them to that.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Is it possible to take them right from the camera and put them on a wireless external drive?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not going to be able to do it because...
No, you have to use the iPad and it has to make the connection to the wireless drive. And you can use the camera, but you'll have to, you know, move it over.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Drive safely.
Thank you. I will.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with any tablet that you buy, whether it's Apple or, you know, whatever, you're going to find that you do have limited amounts of storage. I just purchased the Nexus 7 tablet from Google. I don't have it yet. I won't get it for another couple of weeks. But, you know, somebody's saying, oh, well, you can't add external storage to it. Yeah, but I know that, and I know how I can connect to it in other ways. And so I'm good, you know. I'm not going to be... I don't need to put a bunch of movies on it right now, and if I do, I know how to manage that. But mm-hmm. There really is, you do have to do a little bit of extra thinking and a little bit of extra planning if you're going to go around with just a tablet.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Stan from Webster, New York. Welcome, Stan. What's your question?
Ah, thanks, guys. And I appreciate you guys giving that information out in regards to the DNS issue.
Well, thanks.
That's been scaring a lot of some of my family and friends, so I've been running around doing some checks for them because they're not as computer savvy. So
right, just go to Google, and if you see the regular Google screen, you're clean.
Yeah. Well, it's been working very well. I haven't run into any problems. But my question regards an issue on my computer. I actually have a Windows 7 operating system on a Lenovo here, and it may be just a simple thing that I just haven't looked at yet, but... I'm getting one of those error messages saying for my, let's see here, it says to check my backup. Now, I believe for some reason my Lenovo originally was programmed so that it was partitioned. So I had like a C drive and a D drive, so that way if I needed to do any like a backups or anything like that, it was set up.
I wouldn't do any backups to the partition.
The message is coming up saying to check my backup and to, clear the space, but I keep getting that message, and I'm not sure how to fix that.
All right, a couple of different things. Let's start with where that message is coming from.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could be coming from the software that's supposed to back up from C to D, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could be from some other piece of software you've loaded that's trying to back you up to a cloud somewhere. You need to know where that message is coming from first.
Okay.
Once you know that, then you just you do some research into the manual or online for that particular place, right? I mean, if it's coming from this software, first, let's go back and talk about this software that's running in the background that's supposed to back up from C to D.
Okay.
That's probably not the most useful backup you'll ever perform.
Right.
Because if they are partitions of the same drive, and anything happens to that drive... you will lose both partitions, so you have no backup.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't do it that way anyway. If you're going to back up somewhere else. Back up to, you know, if you're, well, you're running Windows, so you could back up to the Windows cloud thing. You could back up to the Google cloud thing. I think you can even back up to iCloud from a Windows machine, right?
Well, I've kind of taken it to a lower level. I have my own external hard drive, so
perfect.
I created another, you know, hard drive just to back up on.
Yeah, because
then make sure that the error message is not coming from that software too.
Right, it's actually coming from my D drive, which it just keeps telling me that I need to do a disk cleanup. But there's nothing to clean up. It only just shows files to delete, and it just says for the recycle bin, and it's at 0 bytes. And I keep getting this message.
Yeah, what I would do is I would turn off that software anyway.
Yeah.
Because honestly, it is completely useless.
Right.
Backing up from one partition to another partition on the same hard drive is not a backup, and it will do you no good.
Yeah, if that hard drive crashes, you're hosed.
Yeah,
right.
And folks go, but I backed it up to the other D drive. It's all still the same physical drive.
Right. If it's not a separate physical drive, even if it is a separate physical drive, and it's in the machine, and the machine gets struck by lightning or something,
you lose
the backup too.
Yep. Right.
You know, you want to be backed up to something off the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
So the best thing you can do, honestly, is figure out what software is giving you that error message.
Okay.
And turn off or uninstall that software.
Yeah.
Because it truly is a useless piece of junk inside your machine because backing up from C to D does nothing.
Gotcha. All right. Now, just one other quick question, if you guys don't mind. I also have like this McAfee, you know, antivirus plus, which just expired. I mean, do you guys recommend continuing to, you know, use that that program, you know, for antivirus software? Or I know you guys push the AVP or AVG or whatever that was called.
AVG, Avast, even Panda, all good products. The reason we tend to push those are twofold. One is they're free, or they have free versions. We always recommend that if you use them, you send them some money because that encourages them to keep creating the product. Mozilla, nobody paid anybody for Thunderbird. Now there's no more Thunderbird.
Right.
So if you're gonna if it's a product you want to pay for, then certainly McAfee's AV Plus is a pretty good product. The thing I don't like about it is I personally believe it's a little bloated compared to AVG or Avast or Panda.
Okay.
But it does a fine job, and it is true that most viruses make sure they can get past the big three, McAfee, Norton, and Computer Associates, before they release them. So it may be less effective for some viruses than Avast and AVG, but that's really true of everyone because, again, it's a leapfrog game, right?
Right.
They bring out something that beats the antivirus, then the antivirus beats that, then they beat the antivirus, and on and on and on. So really, if you're happy with McAfee, pay for it, go for it, you win.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Stan. Keep smiling.
All right, take care.
All right, we are going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rick Harrison, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. And we are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'm going to read another news item. A malicious app that made its way into Apple's App Store and, if downloaded, then went ahead and uploaded a user's phone book to a remote server has been removed by Apple. It's believed that the app was the first significant piece of malware to land in the App Store in the 4 years it's been open. The app, a contact utility program named Find and Call, was ejected from the App Store by Apple late Thursday. Find and Call also found its way onto Android's Google Play Store, and Google removed it from there Thursday as well. Kaspersky Labs discovered the perils of Find and Call, which includes a Trojan to do the dirty work. Once the user launches the app, Kaspersky says, he will be asked to register in the app using his email address and cell phone number. Both fields won't be checked for validity. If user wants to find friends in a phone book, his phone book data will be secretly uploaded to a remote server. There's no end-user license agreement, no terms of usage, no notifications. The users, Kaspersky says, will be able to continue using the app, but at the same time, the application steals data from the device. It steals phone book and cell phone numbers, which are uploaded to a remote server to be used for SMS spam campaigns. Each phone book entry will receive SMS spam message offerings to click on the URL and download the Find and Call application. It is worth mentioning that the from field contains the user's cell phone number. In other words, people receive an SMS spam message from a trusted source. Clearly, Apple's rigorous screening of apps before they're allowed in the App Store wasn't quite rigorous enough in the case of the Find and Call app, as it was able to slip through the net. Trudy Muller, an Apple spokesrobot, said that the app was removed due to its unauthorized use of users' address book data, a violation of the App Store guidelines. So it wasn't removed because it spams, but because it didn't tell the user it was going to spam. So our question to you, did you get caught by the Find and Call app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. How many people do you know got caught?
I don't know of any that got caught.
Excellent. I don't know how popular that Find and Call app actually was.
Only the owner would know.
Right. But the
Apple.
But the the reality is that all you folks have been saying, oh, we can't possibly get any kind of problems. You can get them. Even Apple is not 100% perfect in protecting you from the wiles of the internet. So be more careful what you download. If you have the Find and Call app, just delete it, and the whole problem will immediately go away. All right, our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering if you could pick only one antivirus program, be it paid or free. I'm going to assume a paid version is going to be, by default, better. Which would you pick? And how effective are they comparing like how they handle viruses to malware?
Well, you'll find you'll find like 100 million different comparisons on the internet. All of them are probably wrong, because whatever version they compared doesn't exist anymore, right? I mean, everybody updates.
Right. Everything changes way too quickly in the computer industry.
Right. But personally, when I set up a Windows machine, like, for example, oh, my wife's, I use either Avast or AVG.
Oh, really? Okay.
Although I have also used Panda. I like I said, each of those can be paid for. They offer them for free,
yep.
But my suggestion is be a good little doobie. Pay the few bucks. It's not a whole lot of money. And it encourages them to keep developing the software for free, frankly. And, you know, we've already seen the cautionary tale of Thunderbird. So it just makes it more obvious that people really need to do that, to make sure that they get their best, their favorite apps, a few bucks to make sure that they keep making those apps.
Well, that's why I always tell folks, it's like the, and I go by the Pram oil filter commercial. Back in the day, the guy stood there with a Pram oil filter or all these tools in his hands. And he goes, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, showing all the wrenches, which, you know, in essence, it's going to be a lot worse payment than just having a simple $5 oil filter changed.
Yep. It's absolutely right.
Can I ask another question in there?
Sure. I don't know. Can you?
You had just mentioned a Trojan. How is that defined in relation to a virus or,
the problem is that...
It's a fine line.
Yeah, the problem is that over the years, all of the... definitions have blurred. Basically, a virus is a program that acts like a human or a real world virus. It moves from host to host to host on its own. This is opposed to a Trojan, which like the Trojan horse, which pretends to be one thing and actually is something else. So Find and Call pretended to be an app that let you find and call your friends. But in fact, in the background, it was uploading your user information and phone book and everything else to the net. So, you know, beware of Greeks bearing gifts. Well, that is the Trojan horse. They brought this huge offering. The Trojans brought this huge offering in. And in the middle of the night, the Greeks broke out and destroyed Troy. So that's the whole deal there.
Okay, And just one last thing. I had asked you about a month ago about this, but I needed to hear it again. I had told you how I went to research a product on the web, and after I found the site and the product that I kind of liked and put it in my bookmarks, I traveled to other sites, and I'm getting the banner ad for that product again. And, you know, getting rid of cookies doesn't make any difference. You can't stop it. And it just seems like there has to be some way. It used to be you just get rid of your cookies, and you wouldn't see the banner ads for the site that you've already been at. Why would I be getting this solicitation again and again? It's almost like I'm not going to buy their product despite them because I'm getting it so much.
Well, here's the deal on that. When you go out on the Internet, and everybody blames Google for this, but you know what? Everybody does it. But I'll use Google as an example. But I could be using Facebook, Yahoo, Apple, Microsoft, everybody. But I'll use Google as an example. You go to Google, and what Google gets from you is a number of things. Your
IP address.
IP address is one of them. And they match that. They don't know you, but they know what IP address you came from. And they know you searched that somebody at that IP address searched for, let's say, the Tesla Motors S1 or whatever they're calling that car. And let's say you do that once, maybe Google doesn't care. But you do that 5, 10, 15 times, you compare different electric cars to each other, yada, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Google, again, doesn't know who you are, but it knows what IP address you used.
And it keeps that data.
It keeps those data, exactly right.
And that way they can say, oh, well, we know that so-and-so logged on, they did this search for this Tesla car, and why don't we present some ads to them?
Or other cars.
Right.
Or other cars.
Or other electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
So you will start seeing more ads for that and similar products.
You know where this is happening to me right now? It's happening to me on this strange little site called securitytango.com.
Sure, because I use Google. Listen, I need to pay for this site. You don't have any idea what it costs to keep a site running like this one out there.
I'm teasing you. You know that.
I know you're teasing me, but I do use Google Ads, and that's how they do that. If everybody would donate, I would never have to put ads on my site again. But there you are.
Somebody did donate.
I was very, very honored. Pat, my first donation. Thank you, Pat. But basically the deal is this. Whenever you go on any site, and a lot of people use Google Ads, which is why I'm using them as the example, you will start seeing ads for things that you like. Really, they do two things. They when you load the page, Google already knows what's on that page. So they give you relevant ads from that page. So you should see antivirus products and things like that.
Oh, right. Okay.
But they also know that you have been searching for electric cars.
Just based on my IP address?
Yes.
Wow.
That's all they need.
That's all they need. And in point of fact, this is what amuses me about this, because my daughter and my wife and I all have varied interests. And in addition to that, I research all kinds of stuff for the show and for the questions I answer and for everything else. So Google has to think, what the hell is going on in that house?
Yeah.
They have a lot of data on Nick.
They have a lot of very contradictory data.
It's obscure.
On my house. So on the one hand, he's researching Greek tragedy. On the other hand, he's looking for good eye makeup. What?
Maybe they're waiting
what?
That you might come out with the next best novel.
That's right.
So they're keeping track of you, dude.
They are keeping track of me.
They already know you look good in a dress.
I do. I have great gams. There's no question of that. But that's the deal and that's what's going on, Tim. It's all automated. There's no human being sitting around who says, there's this guy named Tim in Webster. And he was looking at electric cars, so let's send him ads. It's just an automated system that says somebody at this IP address was looking at electric cars. Let's send him ads.
And actually, it's not. It's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I don't mind being exposed to products that I'm interested in.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right, and that's their feeling, right? It's not like, oh, there's this guy named Tim in Webster. Let's send him, I don't know, ads for baby diapers. Is he married? Does he have children? We don't care. Here's baby diaper ads. Well, that's going to get annoying. But for the electric cars, which you're actually looking at, that might be useful to you.
And the other thing is they don't know when you've already, all of a sudden gotten tired of looking. So that's why they want to, you know, and the opposite side of that coin is, you know, you might be a little, you know, not too upset with it. Whereas other folks would say, keep sending me as much information, you know.
Right. And eventually, if he stops looking at electric cars and never clicks on the links,
right,
they'll drop off the algorithm,
that
right?
That was the last thing I wanted to ask.
Yep.
Was about how long it would take before they...
Yeah. Oddly enough, Google the people at Google question. Have never given
how many
me
grains of sand is there in the desert?
But they're not stupid, and they get it, and they want to provide only relevant ads. So I'm sure that when you stop looking at electric cars, you will stop getting ads for electric cars.
Right, right.
Within, say, a month.
Okay, okay. I'm all set. Thanks so much for your time. You guys are so much fun. You're funny and informative, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, Tim. And when you buy that electric car, I want to go for a ride.
Okay. Thanks. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling.
Yeah, it's a very spooky thing when, you know, you've just searched for something and suddenly you're seeing ads for it all over the internet. And not just the Security Tango site, any place that has Google ads, and that's a couple of gazillion places on
yeah.
the net.
And of course, they don't know if you ever bought the product or not.
They don't know if you bought it, they don't know if you're still interested, except that you'll stop searching and it'll drop off the net.
Because it wants to give you another ad that might be more relevant on your last search that you just did.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It gets to be a little odd. You know, every once in a while, I'll look over there and I'll see an ad pop up and I go, oh, yeah, I remember when I was looking for that and why and what. You know, it's not something I'm personally interested in, but I had to do the research for someone else, and there it is.
Yeah.
And I live with that now. And it's pretty cool stuff. It's an amazing set of algorithms they've created. And I think that in the long run, it's really not intrusive. You know, it may be a little surprising, a little spooky at first, but it's not a bad thing in any way, actually. So, yeah. Yes? Oh, just a minute. Yeah.
No just warn you.
Yep. But so if you do find yourself getting those ads, you should be okay. And like I said, I do research for everything. I do research for Apple, for Android, for Windows, you know, for Linux, for everything. And so I think they have no idea what to send me. If I go to a tech site, they don't know if I want tablets or desktops or what operating system I want. They don't know what to do with me. I think they just randomly, the heck with it here. Commodore 64, there you go. Knock yourself out.
I think I'm going to have a talk with the boss.
Should I bring the baseball bat?
Yeah, please.
Not a problem.
No, I think we need a third chair in the studio.
A third chair? Oh, you just went and got that chair?
No. Usually Steve's in it. He's sitting on the wooden stool.
Yeah, I've got the uncomfortable seat here.
Why did you do that? You could have had that one.
Well, because I didn't want to, you know, interfere with Dave being comfy here.
And he's very gracious, you know?
Very gracious. Well, there you are. So, yeah, we'll have to talk to him about getting a third chair.
For my butt.
He's laughing his little butt off right now. He's probably falling out of his chair laughing.
He sits here, you know, during the when I come in on Thursday night.
Yeah.
He's sitting in the chair, so his butt's in it.
Well, he's got his own personal throne, crown.
Yeah,
scepter.
And he hides it in his office.
Sure, and we don't get to see that. No,
yeah,
I understand
right.
that. Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. The first hour of this show is thankfully behind us, but there's another hour yet to come. So stay tuned as Dave Enright, Rick Harrison, me, Nick Francesco, and you bring you more of the nonsense you've been listening to for the last hour and possibly, although unlikely, some useful information as well. Stay tuned. We have a lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe to go. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into our second hour of sound bites.
So, yeah, I sent that on to the boss. Let's see how it flies.
Yeah.
You can... No, I'm going to throw it on your shoulders.
I'm already sitting in a nice chair. I sit in this chair every week. It's a beautiful chair.
Yeah,
I love this chair. I'm sitting in this chair.
Wait a minute. I'm older than you.
Yes, you are.
And remember who controls the board.
I understand that. But I'm not the one who says there should be a third chair in here. It's the boss.
Okay. We'll discuss it with him later.
Yes, we will. And in the meantime, we're going to talk to Jason. Jason, where are you calling from?
Altoona, PA.
Altoona, PA. How are you today?
Warm. I hate this humidity.
Yeah, the humidity is tough.
I finally got the last week's podcast downloaded this morning, and I started listening to it as I was driving around. Funny enough, on my rounded rectangle Samsung Galaxy Media Player,
exactly.
And I had a comment for you on that. You guys were talking about how long the rounded rectangle had been in existence. And if I'm not mistaken, there are 50 sovereign states in the Union that use rounded rectangles for their license plates.
Yes. Yes. People have been using rounded rectangles for centuries. Like I said last week, I believe the Ten Commandments were on rounded rectangles. But Apple patented it, patented the whole idea. You can actually go look at the patent, and while they couch it in odd language, what they're actually patenting is a design, a case, that's a rounded rectangle. And that was one of the points of the lawsuit last week.
Well, that would mean that the cases, those tinted covers for your license plates, they have rounded corners to match the license plate. Those would
yes.
be illegal, too?
Yes. 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 As of this moment, and 100 million things, including my refrigerator, are now completely illegal.
The actual reason I called was because I just wanted to give everybody a heads up. There's only 2 days left to make sure that they aren't infected with the DNS changer malware.
Oh, yes.
We've
Thank
been talking
you, yes.
about that since the beginning of the hour.
Yeah, that was our lead story. And it's a big one. It's huge. There's 65,000 people left in the United States alone who are infected with this thing. And if they don't clean it up, they're done. They cannot get on the Internet Monday morning. It's Monday starting at 12:01 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the beginning part of the show. Did you mention about the... a website address that they can visit that will tell them whether
yeah, there
or not
are, there are several. One is dns-ok.org.
Or Google. Yeah. Just go to Google.
Or you just go to Google or Facebook, and if you're infected, they'll tell you.
Okay.
So,
all
yeah.
right. Just so everybody knows, they can't say they weren't warned.
Exactly right, Jason. Thanks for keeping us on our toes.
You guys have a good weekend.
Keep smiling, will you?
The boss said no. I was told him I'm going to use his chair out of his office.
Sure, why not?
He might wonder where his chair disappears to. He doesn't know me that well.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't
I don't
know
give
that
in.
You don't threaten, you just predict.
Hey, if it happens, oh, well.
Right.
He might have to go looking throughout the school for his chair. I'm just saying, you know. They've been known to disappear.
Yeah, he'll start locking his door now, I'll tell you that right now. So, all right, let me do another story. Amazon may be coming out with its own smartphone. The company reportedly is working with Foxconn. Where do we know that name from?
Yes, that's what Apple uses.
Exactly, to develop the hardware, which will likely run Amazon's version of the Android operating system. A phone isn't as far-fetched of an undertaking as it might seem for the company, which has never made a handset. Amazon already has many of the building blocks it would need to make money off a smartphone, including its own version of the Android operating system, an established app store, and well-stocked content marketplaces that could make up a good chunk of revenue for the phone. It also has a pool of loyal customers who trust the brand. Amazon is relatively new to the hardware game. The company's first entry was the Kindle e-reader, released in 2007, followed by its Android-powered big brother, the Kindle Fire tablet. Amazon has had more success than many other companies in the tablet market, thanks to getting an early and a low price made possible by revenue from books, movies, and music. However, the smartphone market is already filled with well-established competitors. Current market leader Samsung shipped 42.2 million smartphones worldwide in the first quarter of 2012. According to research firm IDC, Apple was a close second with 35.1 million smartphones, followed at a distance by Nokia and Research in Motion. There are also some challenges unique to selling smartphones. To build a decent device, Amazon will need the right patents, so it doesn't end up on the receiving end of costly lawsuits. Apple. To that end, the company just hired a new general manager for patent acquisitions and investments, Matt Gordon. Dealing with carriers would be another hurdle. Ina Fried at All Things D floated an intriguing theory. Amazon could buy wireless service wholesale from the big carriers and bundle it with the devices like it does for the Kindle. The rumor that Amazon would unveil a smartphone late this year surfaced in November of last year when Citigroup's research department predicted the device based on its supply chain checks in Asia. The new report, based on two anonymous sources with knowledge of the matter, supports the original theory floated by Citigroup. So, would you buy a phone from Amazon? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One of the other things, this is a side note that I've got to definitely say. As we know, we just finished up the Jazz Fest. And we had one heck of a lot of folks come by and, say to me personally, I heard you guys, and I'm doing my part, and dropped in a dollar.
God bless each and every one of those people.
All those folks that stopped by and dropped in a dollar so we could, maybe lessen, the fun drive.
Right.
I want to thank you all. And I don't know if you heard, Thursday night, I did a special shout-out to my friend Casey.
Yeah.
Casey is a four-year-old boy who walked up to the table. He's just about the height of the table. Puts his arms down on the table and goes, "My name's Casey, and I love jazz." And he puts a dollar in. I go, "Really?" He goes, "Yep. I listen every night." I go, "What time?" He turns to his mom, kind of looks up at her. "Mom, what time?" She goes, "Usually around 8 o'clock. And I gave him a shout out Thursday night, as I had promised, because he's my youngest listener.
Right.
And I guess his folks like listening to this show, too. And they said to say hello to all of you guys.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. On to our next caller, who is Larry from Beaver Lake, New York. Is that what I'm hearing, Larry?
Yep. It's in Windsor, New York. Beaver Lake is a small lake outside of Windsor, New York.
Oh, there you go. And how are things on Beaver Lake?
Just had a thunderstorm here, but it's clearing up now.
Good.
I've been listening, and you were talking about the AVG antivirus, and you mentioned something about if people don't support it, that it might go the way of Thunderbird, and I was a little confused. And are you talking about email Thunderbird, or is there another antivirus named Thunderbird that went the way?
No, we're talking about the email program Thunderbird. That was one of our earlier. That was one of our earlier news items. The folks who created Mozilla have announced that they are no longer going to upgrade or support Thunderbird.
Oh, okay. I missed the early part of the show. I didn't know that. I use Thunderbird, and I used it this morning, and it was fine. But
Well, it won't go away.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Just that, and they will provide security upgrades for a while, but they're not going to improve the product. Right.
Oh, okay.
And the reason that they give is they want to spend more time with their families. No. Wait, that's the political reason. They're saying that basically people aren't buying desktops in huge numbers anymore. They're going away, and that people are using tablets and phones and stuff like that instead, and there's no real need Thunderbird anymore, and that many people are not using Thunderbird anyway because they only have one email address and they're doing it through the web.
Gmail.
Gmail, Yahoo Mail,
they're big.
Windows Live, yada yada.
Well, Gmail, with all the apps that you can get with it, you know, the calendar and, you know, your mail and now storage, you know, I mean, documents. I mean, mm-hmm. It's no reason not to.
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay, well, I still use, you know, I use my Roadrunner email address, but I use the Thunderbird to access it and all.
Right, mm-hmm. And it'll still work.
Yeah.
It's not going to just magically stop working one day. There just won't be a lot of upgrades or anything except security fixes for a while, forever.
Okay.
And now what could happen is because it's an open source project, there may be people who will step forward and take it over. But and as we said at the top of the show, people are finding other ways to do email, and it is not the end-all and be-all thing it used to be. And indeed, people are using email itself less.
Yeah.
The younger generation never emails. They text. Or they Facebook.
Right.
So you don't need Thunderbird for either of those things.
Okay, well, thank you for clearing that up for me.
Sure, our pleasure.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's true, it's just us old farts. Is that we old farts? Who use things like Thunderbird to do our email, and they don't do email anymore. You know, I sent my daughter something via email. She's actually good about looking at it at school because she knows that I'm old and that's how I communicate. But I sent her something over the summer. She said, "Dad, you never sent me blah." I said, "I emailed it to you." "Oh yeah, email." She went literally. "Oh yeah, email."
Hey, you remember that email?
I remember email. All right, our next caller, and you remember phones, right? Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's your question?
Hi, gentlemen. I've got two comments and one question. First, there's a very interesting article in this month's PC World about tracking on the Internet. And one of the things they talk about is there's a company called Blue Kava that claims that they're able to track people without knowing their IP addresses or putting cookies on their computer. They track them by unique properties of their browser, and they claim they've already got 10% of the 10 billion Internet-connected devices on the Internet tracked,
right?
Which is kind of amazing, and they say with 99.7% accuracy.
Yep.
So you can do anything you want with cookies, and these guys apparently can still track you. They do, the article says that you can go to bluekava.com/preferences and opt out of their tracking, which, you know, but it's amazing how scary, sort of, how sophisticated these tracking devices have become. So forget about Google. These guys can track you.
Well, all of them can track you. Google does the same thing in terms of the uniqueness of your particular browser. And it doesn't matter what browser you're using. There are a million things that make it different from every other browser.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this browser different from every other browser? They can track you with that. They can actually, there's a company out there, and I don't know how successful they are yet, or maybe they're just hyping for venture capital money. But they say they can track you based on your typing pattern. So even if you went to another machine, they would know you were you.
Huh?
Yeah.
Everyone has a unique typing pattern.
I don't know that that works because you generally aren't sending individual keystrokes over the Internet. You send a finished word.
Probably.
But they, you know, whatever, if they get $1 million from VC, that's good for them, I suppose.
Yeah, that's probably what they're going for.
Yeah. But that
anybody.
Tracking you is, you know, everybody talks about the getting those tinfoil hats and stuff. They have a billion ways to track you now. You don't even have to have a phone. If you interact with the online world in any way, they know who you are.
Yeah, I'm at their website, and they say you can opt out of being tracked on your device as it moves from one website to the other. But it says it only applies to the device you're currently using and not to other devices in your household.
That's correct. You have to do each individual device.
Yep. So they know when you're sitting at your desktop, when you're using your laptop, when you're using your phone, your tablet. They know it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, second comment on email. I run the Tech Age Learning Center at the JCC. We teach older people to use computers.
Yep.
And I recently did a survey on the ISPs that our students use,
mm-hmm.
and found, because we're interested in what we should be teaching them,
sure.
And found that 55% now are using clients other than, or are using ISPs other than Roadrunner or Frontier for their email. So we're seeing people using Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail. Surprisingly, the number one other provider, webmail provider, AOL.
I knew you were going to say AOL.
Yeah, that blew my mind.
It's hard to believe they're still around.
I knew you were going to say AOL.
Oh, right. I know some folks that still want that interface. They started from day one with AOL and stuck with it.
Yep.
Yeah. And finally, a question. You didn't mention Microsoft Security Essentials when you were talking about antivirus software.
Here's my and I'll speak out and then I'll let you. The problem I have with Microsoft's Security Essentials is like any other thing that Microsoft starts up. They'll start it up, you know, and they had an antivirus program and all this other, too many programs to mention. They'll do them for a while. If they don't turn a profit or find it that it's really, you know, advantageous for them to use, they drop it. So if all of a sudden you're starting to use this and put your eggs all in one basket, you know, you got the OS, now you're relying on them to do this and do this and do this and do that. At a whim, they can drop it. And they say, oh, we're sorry. So I'd rather
they never say they're sorry.
No, they don't.
True. Well, I'm trying to be nice about it. I give them, you know, I'd rather say, heck with you guys, go with a third party person. And like Nick said, you know, these are other companies that you can, they're there, they do regular updates, you pay for the program, and it's a modest fee, but you know, if you need support and updating, you're going to get it regularly. Microsoft might choose just to update it, oh, maybe once a month if you're lucky.
Yeah, the reason I've been recommending that is that it's the one that doesn't nag people for upgrades. You know, people can install it, because I get a lot of questions. They'll say, well, I just got this thing from AVG or Avast, and they want me to buy this suite.
Yes, yes, so, and that's very true.
And they're constantly getting the nags for the upgrades.
Yep, and you're right. Microsoft Security Central doesn't nag you for upgrades because it's free. And they'll upgrade it as part of the operating system. So it's not a bad product to use. I agree with Dave. They may dump it, but it's certainly not a bad product to use. All right, we have to take a break.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rick Harrison, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hey, I was wondering what your opinion is for Microsoft's firewall in Windows 7 as opposed to, say, Zone Alarm Free Edition.
They're all terrible.
Yeah, but do you have a router or like a router there from DSL or Frontier?
Just a modem.
Just the modem?
Yeah.
Usually they've got built-in firewalls in most of
them. I have my own modem.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, then I prefer Zone Alarm.
Okay.
Again, I don't trust Microsoft.
Okay.
And the nice thing about Zone Alarm is that it learns. And it protects you from both incoming and outgoing problems. So you might see a pop-up that said, you know, X is trying to get out to the Internet. Is that okay?
All right. And Rick said they're both terrible.
No, I'm just teasing because I'm a Mac guy.
Yeah, he's a Mac guy.
That's a whole other ball of wax, isn't it?
We don't hold that against him, though. We still let him come in.
We let him come in the studio. Nice of us. But yeah, I personally agree with Dave. I prefer Zone Alarm. I'm not saying that Microsoft's firewall is a bad product.
It's better than nothing. If folks are, you know, don't know what to do, I guess it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Right.
So that's all inbound blocking, no outbound, right?
I don't honestly know, but I don't believe that that Microsoft does outbound blocking.
No, I think it's mainly inbound.
Okay, so if say I get a router, then I'd have, what, a NAT firewall?
Well, Linksys has a built-in firewall in it.
Well, yeah, it depends on the router you get. Many routers actually come with a built-in firewall, as well as NAT and a couple of other things. So having those means you don't really need to run anything on your machine except that zone alarm is also an outgo, right? And it'll catch it right at your machine, so you'll know if you're infected.
Okay. Sounds good.
There you go.
Thank you.
Sure. And the reality is that back in the day, you know, you had to be really careful about what you ran because you didn't have a lot of processor cycles.
Yep, that's true.
Right? But nowadays, our machines are idling 99.9% of the time anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's why Apple came out with that blue flashy button that would pulse. You had to use up those CPU cycles.
Got
to
use them up.
My theory still holds, and it's got to be at least, what, 20-some-odd years old. And I've always said, over 75% of the folks out there don't use more than less than 50% of the power in their PC.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
And it's held true. And I'm talking back to the old 286 days.
Yeah.
And nobody's been able to dispute it yet. And that's been over 20 years.
Yeah, well, every year the computers become much more powerful. And there's a lot more CPU cycles to fill.
One of the other things, and talking about going back to, you know, what Bill Clancy was saying there, you know, some of the things that have gone away. You know, some of the older computers, the technology. There's more technology right now in those cards that they open up.
Yep.
And play, you know, record your voice. The technology is so small and micro, but yet you can open up a card, record it, close it up, and present it to, say, a grandchild or a person for a birthday. There's more technology there than was back in the 286 days.
Than when we sent people to the moon.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
All right, another news.
Would you like to try that again?
Lookout has discovered that Yahoo Mail's Android app, the center of a potential Android botnet investigation, doesn't encrypt user data in transit, issuing a warning that hackers could easily hijack a user's account. Lookout is the antivirus program for Android. Although you can enable encryption in the app, settings by default, the app does not secure data in transmission. Unaware users could find their entire accounts hijacked when connected to an insecure Wi-Fi network in the same vein as the FireSheep attack back in 2010. Given this security oversight, we believe that a very plausible explanation for the SMS spam botnet reported recently involves session hijacking, Lookout CTO Kevin Mahaffey wrote in an updated blog post. Microsoft and Sophos initially believed a spam attack coming from Yahoo Mail service was related to Android's first botnet. The fix is pretty simple. A user can enable SSL within the app by going to Options, General Settings, and select Enable SSL. However, it's a little surprising that Yahoo didn't enable encrypted communication by default. Meanwhile, Yahoo issued the following statement. While our investigation into claims of a potential malware compromise operating as a botnet is ongoing, we can confirm that there is not a problem with our official Yahoo Mail app for Android, and there is no reason for users to want to install the app. Please, please, please keep using us for email. We have no other purpose on earth. Mobile forensics firm Via Forensics, the folks who discovered the famous man-in-the-middle flaw in PayPal, ran the app through a security audit, confirmed Lookout's findings, and successfully hijacked an account. While using the Yahoo Mail app for Android, version 1.4.4, the traffic was not encrypted over SSL. There's an option, but it's off by default. We grabbed a cookie from their ad network and then used it to log in. We were successful in doing this without ever getting the person's username or password. Notice they never even had the person's username or password. We then had full access to their account, said Andrew Hoag, CIO of Via Forensics. In 2010, Via Forensics flunked the Yahoo Mail app for not securely storing usernames or emails. Do you use the Yahoo Android app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Dick did from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Comment and a question.
Yeah.
Comment was, the other night I was ready to buy Malwarebytes because they asked me if I wanted to buy it for $15 covering two computers. I was ready to do that, and a pop-up comes up from, I believe it was Vistaprint, saying you could get Malwarebytes free if you order some business cards from us. And I did, which was not a lot of money, and got the business cards already. Where and when does the free Malwarebytes come, or was this a scam?
I have no idea. I haven't bought anything from VistaPrint, and I can't tell you how long. But maybe you should go
contact
on their website
them.
And see what that's about. There may have been an email with it that you missed or got stuck in your
or a link in that email that you should have clicked on to go get your free copy.
Right.
A lot of these come up though occasionally on my computer. They will ask me if I want such and such, buy this, and I'll get the other thing free. And I'm wondering if I maybe don't have pop-ups or no pop-ups enabled.
Well, you better first call, go to VistaPrint and say, all right, I got my cards. I'm very pleased with that. It was a good offer. But you also mentioned that I get this for free. Where do I get that?
Yeah, okay.
Hold their feet to the fire on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And second question, how do I print screen? I have Windows XP and Windows 7, and there is a button on the keyboard that says print screen.
Right.
How does one print just the screen they're looking at rather than six different pages when I print?
When you do a print screen, what it does is it captures it into memory. Then usually what you have to do is open up, say, a program like Paint, Microsoft Paint, and open up to a blank canvas. You know, you start a new project, so there's the canvas there, and then you can do an insert. And you can insert what you print screened.
And where is this word print insert coming from? Keyboard or part of that program?
No, you can usually do. Hold on, I got to look at the keyboard. Usually, you can do a Control C, and that'll paste.
Got it.
Or wait a minute. Is it
Control? Listen, two things. When you do that, it generally goes to the clipboard, so you can paste it into a Word document or whatever. Yeah. But Alt Print Screen will also take a screenshot. One of them, Print Screen takes, I believe.
I'm on the phone.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Print Screen will print your entire screen.
Right.
Alt Print Screen will capture just the window you're on, the active window.
Okay.
Again, then you can either open up Paint or Word.
What about Notepad or WordPad?
Yeah, you can open up WordPad, you can open up Excel, you can open up anything that will accept Control V, a pasted image, and paste that image into it, and now you have that.
So it will retrieve it and then put it on the screen once I do step two there with the WordPad or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
One product that I like using, and it was very inexpensive, and I use it a lot, it's called Snagit.
Say it again?
Snagit.
S-N-A-G-I-T.
And that is such a great program. Once you've got a screen open, you can open up Snagit, and it'll allow you to select what part of the screen that you want to capture. It'll capture it. Now, on that screen, once you have it captured, you save it, and then you can put other notations on it if you want. And I just find it, if I only want a small segment of the screen, I can select just that small area.
Okay.
And they've got a lot of other features in it that you can do scrolling, and it's a fantastic program.
Snagit.com. I will try that one, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Bye. But again, you can then just control V it into any into any document, anything that will accept a pasted image.
Yep. Like you said, Word or...
Word, WordPad.
Office, OpenOffice.
LibreOffice.
Mm-hmm. You know, on your Mac, if you want to get a screenshot or any part of the screen, you just have to use Command-Shift-4. It'll give you a crosshair, and then you just drag it over whatever part of the screen you want. Mm-hmm. And it'll put the screenshot right on your desktop.
I think Windows 7 also has a what they call a snippet tool. Windows 7 has it in there that you can also select... If I remember, I haven't used it much because I've used Snagit again. But, yeah, in Windows 7, there is a tool also, like in the Mac, that you can select a certain part of the screen and capture that.
Yeah, I have a little utility that lets me do that on my Linux box. We have we have to keep track of our time. And anytime somebody screws it up, I have to fix it. But I have to take a picture of the screen before I fix it, and then another picture of the screen after I fix
it,
and then attach it to a document, and they have to sign it. Of course, I do all of that by capturing as little of the screen as necessary, pasting it all into a PDF document, and then letting the person sign the PDF document on my tablet, because I'm not going to print any paper ever again if I don't have to.
This is a waste of trees.
This is the only paper I print anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
He's pointing to the news.
Yeah, I'm pointing to the news. I still print. I still do that. I am old school about that, where I want to be able to see that piece of paper and throw it around and do what I got to do. We just did Dick from Rhonda Quaid, so we don't have him anymore. I'm having that argument at work. I don't print anything anymore. I print stuff for my boss who likes paper.
Mm-hmm.
I print this on
Saturdays only.
Saturday, Friday nights for the show on Saturday, and I print labels for my wife's business in the public market. But that's it.
And the thing that is, though, even the stuff that you print, we turn around and recycle here at the shop
or at the studio, because that's
what I write the names on. It's all paper that's on the back side. We cut it up into quarters, and I use it as scratch pads that I can tell you, I write down the person's name and where they're calling from and pass that on to you. And it's just handy stuff to have here. So we get quite a bit of use out of the printed paper that we do use here.
Remember desktop publishing?
Yes,
I do.
It's kind of going by the wayside or turning into something else.
Well, it's turning into becoming, e-book publishing.
It's becoming that, and it's becoming, all websites? And paper is not being used so much
anymore.
Well,
it's just like they said, one of the other things that was in that article is mail.
Yeah.
Most folks don't, along with the postage.
I'm old enough to remember more than one mail service a day, two a day.
Morning and afternoon.
Yep.
And I can see them, and hear me now, remember me later. I think they're going to be dropping Saturdays and not too different.
We've already talked about that.
Yeah, and I think that's going to happen because, the government keeps trying to find budget cuts.
There used to be 6 deliveries a day. When I was a kid, I remember 2.
Mm-hmm.
And now, days go by, we don't get mail that isn't junk.
Well, look at also the newspaper. I mean, we used to have the DNC and the Times Union. Slowly, the Times Union went away. Now we got the Democrat and Chronicle, and there's less and less content in that. Because I can remember the Thanksgiving paper.
It used to be thick.
When I was a paper boy, that thing had, when we delivered it, it had to be a good 4 inches thick. And my dad used to always help me on Thanksgiving Day because we'd load up the station wagon. Normally, I had my my wagon.
Yep.
I could pull around and deliver the papers because Sunday papers were huge as it was.
Yep.
But on Thanksgiving, they were mega big. And we'd go around and deliver them.
I used to help my friend. We'd go down on our bikes for the Thanksgiving paper and for some of the Sundays. Whenever there were all the weeks that there were the big inserts.
Yes.
And the papers were thick. He couldn't handle it on his own. Just couldn't, make enough trips.
Yeah. Oh, no. They were huge.
I'd go with him, and we'd load up the saddlebags on the back of the bikes and the baskets on the front. We'd load them up and deliver the papers that way.
I can remember my dad would help me deliver them. And then after we were done, because I lived in Greece, we'd go up to Northgate. And on Thanksgiving Day, Ebert's Bakery was still open. And we'd go up there and get a dozen of their hot glazed donuts and bring them back home. And that was always good to sit there with coffee and hot glazed donuts.
Nice. Well, instead of printing in 2D now we're all starting to print in 3D.
Oh, I want one.
They are the coolest things. At the Apple Cider meeting, we had the people from Interlock come, and they gave us a little demonstration on 3D printing. It was wonderful.
Oh, how flipping cool is that?
Now, you're talking about the actual 3D models?
Yes, you actually get 3D devices out. You say to it, I want to print a ring. I want to print a pin. I want to print a shoe.
I've done those.
Yeah.
They're called Z-Print. Is another manufacturer.
It's another manufacturer.
It's MakerBot as well.
Yeah, and this makes it out of powder. It takes a few hours, but I've got sitting on my desk a baseball.
Yep.
And this three-dimensional, I want to call it a square, and it's got different elevations, and it's colors, the whole spectrum.
Yeah. Well, here's the
and
deal.
This printer does
it. That's a sintered metal device, and they cost hundreds and thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars. The RepRap and the MakerBot are in the $1,000 category.
Yes, the MakerBot, I think, is $1,800.
Yeah. All right, $1,800. And RepRap, somewhere in the same vicinity. RepRap is a kit only, as I remember.
Yes.
MakerBot, you can buy the actual device.
Totally made, yep.
And then you buy plastic in multiple colors.
And you can get it in spools, too.
Right. You buy plastic spools of wire, and that gives you... and that gives you your various colors and stuff.
If you go to YouTube, you can see some excellent videos on 3D printing. I highly recommend
it. And they have one head, two head, three head, four head, depending on how many colors you want to print, you know, different models that will do that. All right, and if anybody wants to send me one, I'm more than happy to accept and play with it and show off what I make. Going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Venrick.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Kevin from Brighton on the line. Welcome, Kevin. What's your question?
Hi, I have a Mac question. I have a Mac Mini that is, it's probably, 5 years old. So it's the last model that they used the PowerPC in before they switched over to the Intel chip. So I'm limited with what OS I can use. And it turns out now I'm also limited with the version of Firefox that I can use on it. And I've been using Firefox all along, and now I'm getting a pop-up just, you know, every time I turn it on saying I need an upgrade. And I try to upgrade, and they say that my OS doesn't support, or they don't have an upgrade to support my OS. So am I stuck with this, or is there some way to turn that off in Firefox?
So do you just want to browse the web? I mean, do you mind changing browsers?
Well, I've switched to Safari pretty much because I'm tired of these annoying pop-ups.
Okay.
But I do like the layout and some of the buttons on Firefox better than Safari. Should I just go ahead and use Safari, or is there a way to turn off, you know, these constant upgrade reminders from Firefox?
Well, there may be a preference in Firefox that you can set that'll say, please don't bother me. But the other thing is, you know, the internet and technology is always moving ahead, and you always have to keep up one way or another. Sometimes you can buy some time by switching a browser. You could use either Safari or Camino or any of a number of other web browsers out there. They may start saying, oh, your processor's too slow. We can't use this anymore. Intel's only. And at that point, you know, you're going to have to bite the bullet and just get yourself another machine.
Now, on the other hand, how married are you to Apple's operating system?
Well, I guess it's like anything. Once you learn it, you don't want to take the time to ditch it and go learn something else.
Right. The reason I ask that, however, is because there are a couple of different Linux-based operating systems that will work on the Mac Mini.
Okay.
Probably the easiest one to use is Mint, Linux Mint,
mm-hmm.
at mintppc.org. The PPC, of course, stands for PowerPC, which is the chip that's in his Mac Mini.
Yep. Right.
So if you really get and Rick is absolutely right. Apple has moved on and expects people to do so as well. But many of us have these old machines that we don't want to just stick in a closet and never be able to use again.
Mm-hmm.
And while you can stick with old things and put up with the annoyance of the upgrades and the whatever, you can also move along with a more modern operating system like Linux Mint, which has a version directly for the PowerPC.
Okay.
I have used it. It is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. You have to learn a little bit. It's a little bit different. You have to learn a few new things. One of the things I most love about Linux is that everything is free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I have an operating system. I have an entire office suite. I have graphical editors, photo editors, browsers, email, name everything, and it's all free.
Mm-hmm, right.
That's a pretty interesting little graphic, and it had a PC user, a Mac user, and a Linux user all getting upgrades, and the Linux user went, great, more free stuff. And the Mac user went, not another upgrade. And the Windows user went, ooh, only $99.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But basically, if you're interested in sticking with Apple, then you're just going to have to live with what you have today, including all the annoyances. Maybe switch to a different browser, but that's about it. But if you're interested in exploring something else, Linux Mint PPC, mintppc.org, is probably the easiest. There are others, penguinppc.org, debian.org/port/powerpc, but I honestly think Mint PPC is probably the easier one to use.
Okay, I'll check into that.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
And that is both an amazing thing and a painful thing that Apple has done way more than once in their life. They have the guts to say, you know what, we're abandoning this.
It's too old a machine, and we're not going to support it.
We're not going to support it anymore. That's basically it.
But, and, you know, Mac users typically hold on to their machines for about 7 years.
Right.
But the industry is moving ahead so rapidly that your machine is basically old after three.
Yep. And I commend Apple on being willing to say, which is something that Microsoft really has never done. Said, well, we're just going to abandon all you people. It's time for you to move into the 21st century along with us. Sell what you've got and buy new. But on the other hand, many of us can't afford new.
Oh, yeah. No, I ran across a hacker the other day that had his MacBook Pro, and I noticed he was running an operating system that seemed a little different. And I said, what are you running? And he says, Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it can be done.
Because he's still got a perfectly working PowerPC laptop. He just doesn't have a modern operating system from Apple to run on it.
That's right. But eventually his hard drive in that machine will die. And the interface for that particular hard drive won't be there for him, so he's not going to be able to put a new one in.
And at that point, he'll have to upgrade, but
that's
he still
right.
gets another year, two,
it's
five,
right.
All
whatever
it's
doing is buying you a little extra time.
That's exactly right. And since the operating system is free,
yeah.
why not?
Yeah, you
can. Honestly, why not?
Except that you do have a little bit of a learning curve.
Well, yes, you do. Yes, you do. But that's true that... That's true when people move to
that's true to new systems.
Wait till they see Windows 8.
Yeah, wait till they see Windows 8. But even the Mac people, when they move from 8 to 9, 9 to 10, there were differences.
Yeah.
So you're still going to have a learning curve. That's you know, unless you stay with exactly what you've always had, you're going to have a learning curve.
And you won't be able to do that forever.
Right.
And like I say, I'm warning people right now. You know, I've been warning people, you know, because System 8 is supposed to come out this fall. And there, you know, I mean, there is going to be a major shift in the way you see Windows. If you've seen Windows 8, it's all tablet look. There's no more toolbar down at the bottom. You hit the start button and, you know, show your programs. It's all apps. And again, that's where I get into, I'm sorry, I don't like putting my eggs all in one basket because Microsoft is getting like the Mac in that you're going to have to go to their app store to get an app. Well, again, these other individuals that want to develop apps, they're going to probably have to pay Microsoft for the privilege of being on their app store to get in there. And Microsoft is not good at supporting stuff. I'm sorry. They had, in my estimation, a bad track record. They will go jump on board with something, and then all of a sudden, we're tired of it, and goodbye.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. They have abandoned more products.
Yeah.
Than they've had. And not just hardware. I get it. Hardware, you know, it's different. It's gone. But software often.
All right. And here's one maybe you remember. Remember they had, you know, like Quicken and that, you know, an accounting package. Microsoft came out with one. I couldn't remember the name of it.
Microsoft Money.
Thank you. Jeez Louise.
I used Microsoft Access back when it was a terminal program. I actually still have the 5 1/4 inch floppy with Microsoft Access 1.0 terminal program on it.
Yeah, remember though? Money. I mean, they came out with that. No, yeah, and you know,
that was going to be the greatest thing since laser sliced bread. Put all your information
in. Yeah, I counted
in.
And then it was there for about a year and maybe a quarter. Sorry, you know.
Well, they extended it a little longer because they made it part of the small office suite they had. What did they call that? It included Word, Money, and something else.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
And they called it, I don't remember, they called it the small office suite.
Home. Yeah.
It was not Microsoft Office, it was Microsoft something else.
Yeah, it's for the home user.
Yeah.
Because the money was for home use.
Yeah, it might have been Microsoft Home now that you say that. But yeah, it's Microsoft does have that tendency. Everything dies at some point, you know. You don't see a lot of the old software that we used to have out there either, and I get that, but Microsoft does it a lot. Microsoft works. Thanks, Joe. Microsoft works. All right, that's it for another week. We have wasted 2 hours of your life, and we want to thank you for spending it with us. I want to thank Dave Enright. Particularly, I want to thank Rick Harrison, who valiantly came in here and did yeoman service while Steve is making that great circle route north of the Arctic Circle there. No, it was our pleasure. Linda's coming in to control George, who's going to be playing the best German music you will hear all week. We're going to go off and do whatever it is we do when we're not on the air. I think they just stick us in a closet and wait, recharge us for next week's show. But we want to thank you all for listening. We will be back next week, same time, same channel, blah, 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 blah. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, running out a little longer than normal. Sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1 German show coming up. Stay tuned for the Oompa.